right, guys. So I guess I'll start with puppies. So I'm rewarding you for being in here today with cute pictures of puppies throughout my presentation. I'll get to the reason why in a minute, but for now you can have a nice view of a pretty picture of a puppy. Anyone see any good shows last night in Vegas?
I'm sorry?
Win any good hands? Play in the casinos? No? All right, well, what happens here stays here, right? So you don't have to say. So I'll tell you a little bit about myself, a little about the company I work for, because my guess is you haven't heard of it, but you might suspect I have something to do with animals, which I do not. So about me, I've been in digital marketing and websites and social media lead generation for about 12 years, doing all sorts of things, working for a variety of companies. I've been in B2B, B2C, I've marketed online courses, I've marketed political campaigns, I've done bicycles and SaaS tech startups. Right now I'm working for a company called Kroll. I've been there for about 3 years now, heading up their marketing strategy and digital marketing campaigns and building a team there. Kroll is about a 40-year-old company, does about $1.5 billion in revenue. We're in 26 different countries and have about 2,000 employees. Which is pretty big. Has anyone in here heard of Kroll or have any idea what we do? You're cheating. I just told you. My guess is no, because if you knew what Kroll did, that would be a bad thing. Generally, you don't want to have to call Kroll. Kroll is an internal investigations business for the most part. We do fraud investigations, so if someone is embezzling from your company, someone has stolen your intellectual property, someone has attacked you from North Korea in a cyber attack and put your movies online. Those are all reasons why you might call Kroll. We do investigations that are internal. We do undercover investigations for corporations. We do cybersecurity. We do compliance and due diligence. All of these things are really kind of heavy. They're kind of serious. A lot of the work we get called for has to do with active shooter situations in a college or terrorist attacks. So instead of putting pictures of all those things throughout my presentation, I just decided to do pictures of puppies. keep it light, you know, we are in Vegas after all. So the case study I'm going to walk you through today, having been at Kroll, it's very different from a lot of the companies I've worked for in the past, which revolved around e-commerce, very quick sales cycles, a lot of younger customers, especially in bicycles. My target audience was usually the 14 to 20-year-old male, so that was fun to try and learn how to talk in their voice on social media. But here at Kroll, my target audience is usually the general counsel, the head legal officer, the chief compliance officer, jobs that sound really boring to me and I have no idea who does them. So it's been a lesson for me in trying to figure out, okay, getting in the mind of my buyer and, you know, where they, you know, are online and what they're doing. But also just updating this corporation overall. It's had a 40-year history of relying on relationships built through law firms, but they're entering a phase of their existence where they need more leads, they need more business if they're going to continue to grow, and they can't rely just on the Rolodexes, literally Rolodexes. Someone came into my office the other day and started our company and brought in a Rolodex. I about laughed. Like, what am I going to do with that? I can't put that into Salesforce. So, you know, it's just kind of updating this entire corporation to how they do business. What are leads? What is online marketing? What is Twitter? They really just didn't know. So 90% of my job, I feel like, is just educating a lot of this population. But every year, for the last 8 years, they've been producing an annual report called the Global Fraud Report. It's done in conjunction with The Economist out of London, and we survey about 1,000 executives around the globe, asking them about their perceptions of fraud within their company, within their industry, and within their region. We compile and analyze the data. We put it in a really neat and beautiful publication that's about 80 pages long. And then, for the first time, we put it online, which is a really big thing for this company. And so we wanted to measure everything that was happening with it. I guess this is why they hired me. They thought I could put together a good social media plan and promote it and use things like Twitter and Facebook and all of those things. So I have a wonderful team. They're absolutely fantastic. And we put together a great strategy of actually using paid social media for the first time. They had a Twitter account when I started, which was great. They had 3 followers. They had started a Facebook page, but hadn't made it go public yet because they were afraid and they had to go through legal and all of these, regulatory channels. So we got the Facebook page live right when I started. It was really exciting. But LinkedIn, they've bought into a little bit more. And some people even have LinkedIn profiles where they use their own profile pictures. So this was a big step. We decided we were actually going to use paid social media as well on top of all these channels and measure them and see how it would go. So I had a couple goals with my team. First, I wanted to understand, what are we going to measure? What are the key, drivers of indication that anything is working? What tools are we going to use to measure which sort of things? How are we going to make incremental adjustments if we see one thing isn't working? How are we going to be able to shift our ad spend to do something else? Are we going to be able to measure ROI? And how will that look? And then we want to be able to tell a story to our executives about what worked and what didn't and what we can do better next time. So that was our overall goal for this effort. I've done this in a lot of companies with a lot more data and a lot bigger traffic, so this is kind of a unique experience in trying to figure out from a B2B side of a company who's never really done something like this, is this really going to work for them to drive leads? So we have a number of tools that we put in place over the course of the last 3 years to actually be able to measure and track ROI on a campaign. You guys are, I'm sure, familiar with all of these. Hootsuite. We've got Google Analytics to track our web data. We use Pardot as our marketing automation platform, and we use Salesforce as our CRM. Is everyone here in the room kind of using similar tools, or everyone using like marketing automation? Some? Okay. Definitely open to conversation about if you guys have other tools too that you use to add to this mix. This is kind of a new effort for this company, so I'm definitely open to a conversation around anything that you hear, you think, I think you could do that better by using this tool, just let me know. So these tools all have, their ups and downs of what they measure and what they can't measure for you. We use Hootsuite and actually native ad programs on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn because this was a new effort. We're not going to invest in any sort of big ad management platform to help us do that. But those will tell you click-through rates, engagement shares, retweets. Google Analytics will tell you things like your landing page conversion rates. It'll tell you if anyone dropped off in the funnel along the way. Your marketing automation platform should be able to tell you how many unique downloads you have of a particular asset. So my global fraud report, how many people actually ended up downloading that. It can also tell you things like the quality of your leads by using grading and scoring models. And then Salesforce, we use as our kind of overall source of truth because that's where our sales team goes in and records, did we actually get an opportunity from a particular lead and what was the value of that opportunity and how long did it take to close? So that ends up being kind of our, end point for going in and actually doing a lot of data analysis. Does this sound familiar to anyone or like, do you guys do things a little bit differently? Sound right? Okay, good. I'm on the right track. Just checking, you never know. All right, so I think sort of the heart of setting up any ROI measurement campaign, the devil is in the details. There's a lot of details to how you set these things up. So kind of setting up how you're going to do all of your tracked URLs to me is kind of the most cumbersome and annoying part of any kind of large campaign effort where you have to build out all of your trackable URLs. What's your source? What's your medium? What's your the campaign name, the content, and building all those UTM tags, if you're using Google Analytics, into URLs, shortening them, and making sure everyone uses them. So if your team is small, it's probably easier to control that. When your team is big, and you have multiple people sending out social media things on all sorts of channels, how detailed are you going to get, just all things you have to kind of think about. Am I going to give everyone a tracked URL that's sending out this? Do I want to know all of that information? Or how do I create, a structure that makes sense and what's really important to measure? So we created a big, long Google Docs spreadsheet of all of our different tracked URLs. before we went out and started promoting everything. We also decided we were going to use a couple custom UTM parameters for persona because we wanted to see, for instance, if our IT buyer, so someone who's an IT risk manager or someone who's a general counsel might respond better on Twitter or on LinkedIn or on Facebook. So we decided we were going to append some custom UTM parameters into our URLs as well and see how those performed. So that was an interesting process as well. A little bit of a learning experience. Google Analytics is always changing. I don't know, I was just talking with Corey here who says he does a lot of training in Google Analytics, but I don't envy that because I know, it's horrible. Like, every time I log into that platform, I'm like, oh God, they've changed everything. So in Google Analytics, we of course set up goal tracking. You know, we went in, specified our destination URL. We set up the conversion funnel. We said they have to go to this landing page, they have to go to step two, and then they have to hit our destination page. And that's going to be our goal funnel. That way we can measure if someone drops off along the way. All sorts of good things that you can do with Google Analytics for that. In Pardot, we had to create a custom field for all those new UTM parameters that we wanted to be able to track. So Pardot is a relatively new marketing automation platform, not quite as advanced as the Eloquas, the Marketos of the world. Does anyone in here use Pardot? No? Okay. Marketo? Got a couple? Eloqua? Okay, good. I don't like Eloqua. We actually switched from using Eloqua. It's very hard for our team to adapt to. But Pardot has got a lot of great qualities. It's very simple, very easy to use. But some of the things are a little bit more basic than some of the more advanced marketing automation platforms. And we ended up having to do a lot of setup on our end to be able to track everything. The other thing we discovered in trying to create an ROI model using Pardot was that they effectively force you into a particular choice for your attribution model. They only store one value for your UTM campaign, so you can either replace it or you can keep the first one that ever gets logged. So that effectively means you have a first touch attribution model or a last touch attribution model, and it was sort of annoying to find that out. So I'm hoping they kind of evolve that over time. I'm not sure we're really there yet in terms of, you know, that being a deal breaker for me, but it's, you know, it's definitely a little frustrating that it wasn't as sophisticated enough to allow for different attribution models within their program. But they do have lead scoring and grading. So what you are able to do is take a look at all those different parameters that you're passing through into Pardot and say, you know, are they of the right department, the right company size, the right title? All of those fun things to establish a grade for all of the leads coming in that says they match what I want to see in a target lead. And then also allow for scoring, which allows you to see how much they're engaging with your content. Are they downloading things? Are they looking at different pages? Are they attending an event and a webinar, et cetera? So it's measuring how much you're interested in them as well as how much they're interested in you. So that allows you to kind of assess the quality of those leads and set up a marketing qualified lead system. Then in Salesforce, we had to do a little bit of an enhancement in terms of our dashboard capabilities so we could actually see what was coming in from our campaigns and make sure we had a process worked out with our sales team around how we were going to see the marketing qualified leads come into each one of those campaigns and how they were going to follow up with them. So we definitely had a couple months worth of back and forth as we were finishing the production of our report to actually make sure that we had a process in place that was going to allow us to be successful. All right. That's fun, right? All that setup. Okay, we actually do get to the fun stuff after that. I feel like it's a lot of work. But once you start seeing the data come in, we launched our report. It was November of 22nd of last year. It was a lot of to-do leading up to that date. And then we realized that, you know, it's all fine and good to set up a campaign to measure marketing ROI, but you really can't get there very quickly in a business where you have a 9-month to a year-long sales cycle. So what am I going to measure in the meantime? There's a lot of things you can look at while you're setting up a campaign. I'm sure you guys are in there on your social platforms, looking at all your metrics, your clicks, your engagements, et cetera. So we looked at four things kind of consecutively as we were trying to make assessments about what we were going to do with our advertising spend. First, we looked at our landing page conversion rates and compared those by tactic, by LinkedIn paid ads, by LinkedIn organic traffic, by Facebook paid ads, by Facebook organic traffic, Twitter, et cetera. And we wanted to compare how those were doing from a conversion rate standpoint on that particular landing page. Then we wanted to look at overall volume that was coming in, because we were spending more on some channels because the clicks cost more than we were on others. So were we able to generate more volume by some tactics versus others? What about that overall lead quality? We had a very strong suspicion that LinkedIn was going to lead to a higher lead quality based on who we knew our target demographic was, and that Twitter, we were quite dubious. Overall, what was that cost per qualified lead? And that's what we really kind of drove to towards the end. So here's what our data showed. Our landing page conversion rates from all social traffic that we drove, organic and paid, were above the average. So we kind of baselined at around 5 to 6% conversion rate on our landing page. But our Facebook ads had about a 4x improvement over the baseline for that conversion rate. It was really quite remarkable. We're like, oh, that's awesome. We had no idea. We had like no Facebook page when I started, so look how well that's performing. That's great. And then, you know, the other ones, you know, kind of performed pretty well. That blue line up there is our baseline, but both Twitter and LinkedIn came in above that. But we were pretty impressed with that Facebook rate, so I kind of dug into that a little bit more. You know, I had to kind of drill down into some data, and I was like, what was driving that? And it turns out that, you know, the Facebook campaigns that we set up, we did it based on three different audience types. We did a lookalike audience, which was about 1 million people, based upon our current email subscribers to our annual report. We also had a list just of people subscribing to our annual report. We had a list of retargeting, so everyone who was already visiting our website but who had not yet subscribed to our annual report. And the ones actually driving that data were the latter two audiences. So it was everyone who was already in our network that were actually driving those really high conversion rates. So it looks really great on paper, but those were people we already know. So for me, it was really a lot less valuable in terms of a lead. So not really even a lead. We already know those people. So then I wanted to look at lead volume by tactic, because that wasn't really showing me what I wanted to see. So, you know, lead volume by tactic kind of corresponded a lot to what I saw with the actual conversion rates. Facebook was able to drive actually quite a lot of volume for us in comparison to Twitter and LinkedIn. And we probably could have scaled that a little bit more. However, again, it's people I already knew. So I wasn't really interested in scaling that necessarily. I could already reach them by email. And overall, though, each one of these efforts was contributing quite a bit of traffic to our overall effort. I should just say, overall, in terms of this year's report, we generated more traffic in the last 2 months for that report than we did the entire last 2 years through all of our different mechanisms. It was really, you know, quite fun, and, you know, social played a very big role in helping us do that. So then we took a look at lead quality by tactic. And this is where we started to see some really interesting stuff, and I think stuff that kind of reiterated what we assumed we were going to find. And that was that LinkedIn had the highest grades and the highest engagement out of anyone coming through our campaigns. So the quality was really there. When we looked at paid versus organic, it was pretty much the same. You know, the quality of the leads was about comparable. Facebook leads were also really high, but again, people we already knew. And then take the example of LinkedIn actually paid versus organic. So if you are targeting your company page on LinkedIn, so that's kind of your organic LinkedIn reach, those are people who already like your page. Again, already in your network, probably, for the most part. Maybe they follow your LinkedIn page and aren't actually subscribed to your report, but, you know, at some point they probably would be already part of your network. So the LinkedIn organic traffic, high quality, but not new leads. So this was continuing to frustrate me because I really wanted to understand what's driving new people to sign up for our report and the quality new people coming into our campaign. Because that's really going to help be the indicator of ROI. But ROI, I'm kind of thinking at this point, it's going to be a long time before I see it. So I wanted to eventually figure out what's the cost per marketing qualified lead. Because that's going to weed out all of the noise. It's going to weed out all the competitors. It's going to weed out all the students. It's going to weed out all the people that are already in my network. Because now I'm just looking at people who met my threshold of grading and scoring in Pardot and who are passed over to my sales team as new leads that nobody else knows. It's still a little bit of a manual process in terms of calculating the value because I realized I didn't have a quality report set up in Salesforce to do this. So if you have advice on how I should do that, please feel free at the end to ask questions and make a comment about it. But I didn't really have this set up to do at the beginning of the campaign because I didn't realize this was going to be the metric I wanted. But when I started to do those calculations, I realized that again, Twitter ended up providing no marketing qualified leads. So they actually did drive downloads and lots of, quote, leads, but none of them were qualified. When it came down to the actual grading and scoring system in Pardot and making sure they were new, zero from that entire campaign. Facebook, we had a few, but it was under six, I will say. But most of that traffic and those spikes that we saw were really being driven by people that already knew us. So when it came down to weeding out people we already knew, Facebook also was not a big driver of net new leads that were high quality and past that marketing qualified stage. LinkedIn ads, on the other hand, while initially we were thinking, gosh, these have a really high cost per click, we can't seem to get the right volume, but the actual net marketing qualified lead cost was the lowest out of all of those different campaigns. And the paid channel ended up being a really good tactic for us to use to reach that, amplified audience of people who didn't already know Kroll. So it was definitely an interesting lesson learned. The point of this actual presentation was to talk about ROI. So you guys know the formula for ROI. I'm sure at this point we sat through a couple of presentations already. Your overall profit divided by the cost, so revenue minus cost over cost equals your ROI. At this point, it's February, what's today? February 10th? Okay. So we're about 2.5 months after this campaign launched. I have one win to show from this campaign. It was a $15,000 case. I put about $1,000 into LinkedIn, so divided by $1,000, I've got a 14x ROI on my LinkedIn campaign. It's pretty good. I don't think I'll get fired today for this. But that was pretty good. That's my only win, though, from this campaign. So, when I started to think about, I don't know how your businesses are, my bosses want feedback yesterday on how things worked. Like, I launch a campaign, they're like, how's it going, 3 hours later. So if I sit down and tell them, it's going to take me a year to get you a good report on ROI, that might get me fired. So I think after kind of going through this exercise, it's not a conclusion I thought I was going to come to, honestly, because I wouldn't have put in to do this presentation 3 months ago if I would have said, I don't know, social ROI is really valuable for me. But it was kind of the conclusion I came to after this. It's just, it's not a valuable metric for me to make business judgments that are necessary in real time to make decisions about where I'm going to spend my money and to give feedback up to leadership. I think it's still valuable to do, and I think, in my annual analytics report, I'm definitely still going to calculate the ROI of our different campaign efforts and tactics, but it's not something that drives my everyday decision making, which I thought was kind of interesting. It wasn't the conclusion I thought I was going to come to. The most actionable campaign metric I found was to look at the marketing qualified lead cost and to make decisions based on that, because I could get to that point within 2 to 3 weeks after launching a campaign. Still not immediate. You can definitely get those cost per clicks, you can get the conversion rates, But it was the marketing qualified lead metric that I felt really kind of was the leading indicator in what was going to be an ROI metric later on. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I also learned a few things about our tools that had some limitations. I learned some things I didn't really like about Pardot. I still like it as a platform overall. I won't lie, would not probably switch, but I was kind of frustrated with its limitations in terms of attribution modeling. And I still get frustrated with the whole trackable URL process. So those were kind of my lessons learned from going through this effort with a company that hasn't really done this before. I've done it before at a lot of different companies, but this was a unique experience for me. So I would welcome questions, thoughts, ideas on how I can do better. anything you guys want to ask?
Well, thank you very much, Whitney. So let's open it up to questions. I definitely have a few. Go over here first.
Are firms relying on, what intermediaries do they rely on to just choose which firm to do the investigation? Is it their attorney, their accountant? I'm not clear on what the, and then lastly, do you have any recurring business? Or is it just one-offs?
I kind of hope not.
I actually had a question. One of my initial questions was, were you surprised by the results when you were talking about Facebook, and then you mentioned, yes, you were surprised because they were not what they appeared to be, and I mean, that happens often. And also, speaking as a data and organization lover, I would have loved to see the Google Sheet that you were using. I think a question that a lot of people who do work in these kinds of industries have, a question that I know I've had, that I've had to also find answers for other people is, how do you convince management in a very traditional space? I mean, it's hard enough convincing management in B2B, but in a market or a world that has traditionally never needed and never much cared for these kinds of new media, especially even advertising in general sometimes isn't something they look towards, how do you convince management to make even a $1,000 investment in something like this?
I think it's exercises like this that help convince them that it's worth their while. I think without the data, they don't really like making these sorts of investments and decisions. But I think over time, it's definitely a commitment. You know, you're not going to convince them overnight. You know, you have to make the investment in talking with them and a lot of individual one-on-one hand-holding conversations of, let me sit down and walk you through LinkedIn. Let me sit down and help you understand what Twitter is. It's a lot of hand-holding in those situations of key people and selecting who those key people are. When you have evangelists that can then start to, you know, do that work for you, it's even better. So one of the first people that I reached out to at my organization was the chairman. And you wouldn't think it. Everyone kind of had this impression of him, like he was really kind of a Scrooge, kind of, you know, the Mr. Burns. type of guy. You're not recording this, are you? I am so getting fired. But he's kind of a grandpa. He's really nice, you know, so if you just sit and see, you're recording this, right? if you just sit down with him, I think he's really open to things. So myself, you know, a couple of our colleagues, you know, we kind of, you know, took turns kind of sitting down, walking him through LinkedIn, and he is now one of the biggest evangelists of LinkedIn and social media in our company. At like every staff meeting is like, you guys should all update your LinkedIn profiles. If anyone doesn't have a good professional photo, you just let me know, marketing's gonna pay for it. That's great, that's my budget, thanks.
Yeah, I think that's also always a case where you find some evangelist up at the top who then basically forces everybody to do it.
So now that you have all these lessons learned under your belt, do you have any plans of how you're going to move forward after today? I assume that you were surprised, and probably the people that you were hoping would buy into this were somewhat surprised and maybe even disappointed by the results. So how do you kind of take the next steps from here, or have you even gotten to that point yet?